Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, and joining us is David Hale. And David, good evening and welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being with us. All right, let's dive into not only the ACC, but college football in general, and we'll broaden it all out. And let's just start with where we are. It's been kind of an interesting start to the college football season. Most of it was off-the-field stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's been – first of all, I think everybody's glad that there's on-the-field stuff to talk about. When you're dealing with, you know, Urban Meyer and what happened at Maryland and all of that stuff is, you know, I as somebody who is in the news business and is forced to write about this stuff, no one wants to. No one likes this stuff. No one enjoys it. We get a lot of folks that will be like, you know, Ohio State fans that say, oh, you're just trying to bring down Urban Meyer. No, I don't want to write these stories, you know. I'm glad to have on-the-field stuff to talk about. That's what I want to be talking about. But, you know, it's sort of, I think this is an interesting time, maybe societally, but when you boil that down into sports, I think we are viewing a lot of things a lot differently, and that focuses in on the college football world. And so you see, you know, a story like Maryland. You know, I said it's sort of funny to kind of see how all of this has played out at Maryland, and yet, you know, you hear stories about like the Junction Boys and riding your players that hard was kind of considered the way you're supposed to do it, and now it's sort of this thing that may well have gotten a kid killed, and that's, you know, I think we've evolved. So I think we've certainly evolved on the idea of domestic abuse and what Urban Meyer should or shouldn't have done in that situation. So it's good that we're having these conversations, I think, in the long run. But I would always much prefer to be talking about games and the good things about college football than all the off the field stuff.
David, what do you think ultimately happens with Urban Meyer and at Ohio State?
You know, I think that if Urban Meyer had handled this all well, that this might have been sort of the end of it. But I feel like every time he gets in front of a camera or a microphone, he digs his hole a little bit deeper. And it's just, you know, it's frustrating as a person with functioning brain cells to hear him say things like, I don't know how to work my phone, and I don't know how those text messages got deleted. It's an insult to people's intelligence. And, you know, I've made this case sort of from day one with Urban Meyer. We need to separate a little bit Urban Meyer from the action that actually happened or allegedly happened. You know, Urban Meyer didn't go out and beat up his wife. That didn't happen. Whether he covered it up or not is a different story. And to me, the way that you show some contrition for doing that is to be honest afterwards. And I don't get any sense that he is eager to do that. I get the sense that he is eager to try and repair his reputation some in as vague a way as possible. And so I think there is going to be people, journalists, who are going to keep digging. I think there is certainly, we have not heard the end of the story that surrounds Urban Meyer there. And, you know, to me, I think honesty in this situation is the best scenario, you know, like have a little transparency and say, here's what I know, here's what happened. I'm sorry I didn't handle it right, but I want everything out on the table now. And then you don't have to worry about what happens in the future. Ohio State's already said we're going to keep you around, and he's got a very good team and has a chance to win a lot of football games this year. And that could have been the end of it. But if you keep the subterfuge going, to me, that opens the door for more and more things to come out down the road that are going to reopen this wound that you're desperately trying to have healed.
We'll put Urban Meyer in this one category now as we move on. And we went through this exercise this summer. Right now in college football, the national championship coaches, present guys have won championships. Urban.
Nick.
Saban.
Jimbo.
Jimbo.
Dabo.
Dabo. I missed one. Is it four
That's
or five?
It. No, it's four.
Four.
Yeah.
right? Jimbo, Dabo, Nick, and Urban. What does that say to everybody else?
First of all, I think it says that Nick Saban has been one hell of a football coach for a long period of time because he's got the majority of them there. And, you know, I don't know. It would be interesting to go back throughout the history of college football and see if we've ever had this few active coaches with a national championship. I'm not sure that we have. It certainly feels like a small number. But and you talk about, okay, who else could be in that conversation? And certainly I think you have any number of guys who warrant that consideration. And Mark Richt down in Miami has certainly had his share of shots at it over the years. The guy who replaced Mark Richt at Georgia, Kirby Smart, was a play away from doing it last year. So, you know, it's not that there's not, I don't think, any sort of deficit of great coaching in the country. But one of the other things is what you've really seen, I think, is a clear separation of elite programs from everybody else right now. So there is, I think there is a tier one. If you look at this year, I think that the teams that are in the top five rankings right now are pretty far ahead of the team of six and down. And I think you see that to some degree annually where if you look at the money that's being spent, you look at the facilities the teams have, you look at the recruiting that's being done and how much, you know, detail and focus goes into recruiting now, the amount of boosters that you might have to work with, there's a scarcity of resources out there, and there's a handful of teams that are really developing a monopoly on those resources. And so I think it's not just about the coaches. It's sort of to some degree there's some elite teams, and then there's everybody else.
When you look at that and we talk about the four coaches that are there now, does it bother you when people say everybody else in college football in reality can be told they can't win the big one?
You know, it bothers me for a number of reasons. I think, number one, you can always win the big one. It's one game. And, you know, we've seen plenty of examples of crazy upsets. One game can swing pretty wildly. But I do think that when you start talking about who can win consistently over time, there is a smaller number of teams, I think, than I would like to see as a college football fan. And this is sort of the problem of when you have, you know, it's not the NFL. There's no salary cap. You know, there's not an even distribution of revenue among every team in the country. There's not the same level of fan engagement and passion and booster engagement and dollars coming in for every team in the country. So there's an inherent imbalance. And I feel like, you know, to some extent that imbalance has widened in the last 5, 6, 7 years. I mean, you look at what even assistant coaches are being paid right now. Brent Venables just got a $2.5 million contract to be the defensive coordinator at Clemson, and John Chavis and Dave Aranda and John Elko, and, you know, the guys are Mike Elko down at Texas A&M. I mean, these are guys who are making more annually as a coordinator than head coaches were just a handful of years ago. So, you know, I would rather see a scenario where every league has four or five teams that on a pretty regular basis should be in that conversation. It really feels like, as you look at it now, it's Oklahoma and everybody else in the Big 12. It's Clemson and everybody else in the ACC. It's Alabama and everybody else in the SEC. Georgia is sort of making its way up there right now. It's been Ohio State and everybody else in the Big 10. You know, I like the idea of there being really great teams because I love watching great football. But I do think it's bad in the long term if it's the same teams year in and year out over and over again. It sort of becomes like watching the same movie on repeat.
David, we brought you on to talk about the ACC, but we went more broad-based, which was fun. And the story in the ACC right now isn't so much who is winning or who is going to win. It's more about who's not winning. And it's now we're in Miami. It's Florida State. And I think it's they got enough talent to straighten the thing out, but it's a little bit shocking with the way it's playing out, is it not?
Oh, most definitely. And I've talked to some other coaches that have watched them, and it's a little bit of a head scratcher for even them. And you know they're deep into it. And part of it is the offensive line is really bad. They've had injuries at the one position they really couldn't afford injuries, and what they're rolling out there is bad. And so, you know, it's one of those things that you say, is the offense bad because of the O-line, or is the offense bad and it's kind of hard to tell where that ends and where the O-line problems begin? To me, there's been moments in all three games so far where I said, you know, it looks like these guys met each other getting onto the bus to come to the game and they hadn't practiced before. That's how inept that offense has looked at times. And whether you're an experienced O-lineman, whether you've been developed or not properly, or whether you are going to go on and play in the league or anything like that, shouldn't matter when Florida State's playing Samford and you're getting beaten by Samford. Like, to me, that's another level of problem. So, you know, I like Willie Taggart. I hope he does well because I know this is a dream job for him, and I hate to see him, you know, have worked his whole career to get here and start off on such a bad note. But when you look at those offensive line problems, that O-line ain't a thing that you fix overnight. That's not a matter of making a few tweaks here and there. And realistically, if you look at their depth chart, there's not a whole lot of moves that he can make. And so, you know, I don't know how that gets fixed for 2018. So, can those guys get a little bit better as they go? Yeah. Can you tweak the scheme a little bit to try and get the ball out faster and hopefully take some of the pressure off that O-line? A little bit. But I don't know that any of that means that you can do enough of it to be competitive against Miami and Clemson and teams like that when you couldn't even be competitive against Samford for half of that game.
David, you've been a great guest. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right. Oh, oh,
oh, O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.